Well, good morning. We're continuing a series on the book of Acts, looking at different incidents that occurred. The book of Acts is the history of the first 30 years of the Christian church. And today we're looking at one of the most significant events in the book of Acts. So significant is it that it's recorded three times. It's the account of Paul's conversion, the conversion of Saul of Tarsus, a life changed forever. I wonder how many times Paul told his story. Luke tells his story in Acts 9, where he recounts the conversion of Saul. In Acts 22, Paul gives his speech to the crowds in Jerusalem and explains what God's done in his life. And then we come to the account that we've just read in Acts 26, where he speaks before King Agrippa II at Caesarea. This is almost 25 years after Paul's conversion. Can you remember the last time you told the story of when you became a Christian? We can never argue against a person's experience. It is so personal, it's so fresh, that it defies sort of debate, and it's just there, and people have to accept it, take it or leave it. But it's very powerful. So Paul gives his speech before Agrippa. It's the longest of five speeches in Acts in which Paul is defending himself and the gospel. He's accused of being against the law, the temple, and Caesar. But he doesn't go into a detailed argument. He casts his mind back to recount those events on the Damascus Road 25 years ago, where Paul set out from Jerusalem to persecute, arrest, and have imprisoned, and possibly worse, the new movement, the followers of the way. And we read how Jesus invades the life of Saul. And there are these supernatural elements. There's this flash of lightning. There's this voice addressing Saul by name in Aramaic. Why do you persecute me? Saul is struck blind, but as he is struck blind, he's enlightened spiritually. The pieces come together in his mind, and he realizes that Jesus is the long foretold Messiah of Jewish and Old Testament expectation. It says that he is taken hold of by Christ. He's arrested by Christ, literally. The very one who was going to arrest others and imprison them is himself captured by Christ. And then the events that took place in Damascus, where his sight is restored, he's healed. This is how a film presentation, The Miracles of Jesus, depicts the event. Most famous conversion in all of history. We talk about someone having a Damascus Road experience, but I'd like to suggest that Christ had been working in Paul's heart long before that Damascus Road. It's a matter of speculation, but did Saul actually know Jesus? Sorry, we refer to Saul of Tarsus and then his new name, Paul, the name he was given as a follower of Christ. Both Saul and Jesus were born around the turn of the century. As faithful Jews, they would have attended the pilgrim festivals in the capital. They would have both visited Jerusalem and the temple at the same time. Donald Coggan writes this: "Is it not possible, indeed highly likely, that the young teacher from Galilee and the young Pharisee from Tarsus would have looked into one another's eyes, and that Saul would have heard Jesus teach?" there's a little phrase that has long puzzled me. It's a rather strange little phrase. It's talking about kicking against the goads. Jesus said to Paul, "It hurts you to kick against the goads." Have you ever wondered what goads are? It's not a word we use every day. There's a picture of them. Sticks used to prod cattle. It means something that pierces or stings. The word is used of spurs that you would use on a horse or a scourge. The meaning is, you're only hurting yourself, Paul. The same word is used in 1 Corinthians 15. The sting, the goad of death, is sin. What were the goads of Jesus that Saul had been resisting? Jesus likened Saul to a recalcitrant young bullock and himself as a farmer to break him in. Jesus was pursuing Saul, prodding him and pricking him. It was hard or painful to resist. There were intellectual goads, doubts as to Jesus' true identity. If Saul had heard Jesus speak, his whole mindset would have been challenged. Was the way he inherited and had been taught his beliefs from Pharisees like Gamaliel, was it true? Was there another way, a fresh way of seeing the Jewish faith? The faith that God had revealed to the fathers. Saul was being challenged intellectually. But greater than this, I would say, was the goad of Stephen, whose face shone as an angel as he was being killed. And we read of Saul standing there as a witness, holding the coats, the cloaks of those who killed Stephen. He could not escape the witness of this man as he died. One commentator said, Stephen, and not Gamaliel, was the real master of St. Paul. Truth was working away at him. He had seen how someone had passionately explained the meaning of the scriptures and had died for his beliefs, like Stephen's master Christ. And then there were moral goads. Imagine Saul's conscience, the inner turmoil that would have provoked within him as he saw these faithful Jews being killed for their beliefs. Long before we become Christians, God is at work in our hearts. Little by little, He batters down our defenses. We erect all sorts of barriers to protect ourselves against the invasion of Jesus. I don't know if you know the poem, The Hound of Heaven, a 19th century poem which talks about God, the Holy Spirit, being like a bloodhound on the trail, relentlessly sniffing out the person. He's on the scent. He's not going to let him go until he finally discovers him. God is on our case. He loves us so much that he will allow us to experience painful circumstances, difficulties and problems of all manner of kind, so that we yield and surrender to him. And so Paul is converted. The sudden climax of a long, drawn-out process. The stiff neck of the self-righteous Pharisee bows in submission. The ox had been broken in. Saul takes upon himself the yoke of Jesus and discovers that yoke is easy and that burden is light. And he is now yoked together with Jesus in partnership. What is conversion? What does it mean to be converted? Whether it's dramatic or whether it's very private and personal and quiet, it's an encounter with Jesus Christ. Each one of us needs to encounter the risen Christ and be captured by him. And as we do so, our only response is to yield in submission and surrender. And then we're confronted with the goodness of Christ and how far short we fall from his standards. And so we admit our failings and inadequacies, the guilt, the shame, how we have departed from God's standards. And we turn in trust to follow him. The only response we can make is to say, you are the one I will obey henceforth. You are the one I will serve. And that we see perfectly illustrated in the life of Saul of Tarsus, who changed his name, who changed his direction in life, who had a new passion and conviction to live for the one he had once persecuted. Can you remember the day when you became a Christian? It's not possible for all of us, because sometimes the transition is a very smooth and gentle one. It is like crossing the border from one country to another. Imagine, you take the train across Europe, you fall asleep, and before you know it, you're through Belgium, you're through Holland, you're into Germany. You haven't been conscious of crossing those borders, but you know when you awaken. Yes, I am different. Something has happened. And that is particularly true if you've grown up within a Christian family and you cannot remember a time when you didn't know and love and respect Jesus and seek to live by his standards. The important thing, perhaps, is not being able to put a date to it, but to be able to say, I've had that experience. Do you know now that you are following him? Saul was eager to tell his story. How eager are we to tell our story? We're aware of the Alpha launch throughout the country, Christianity Explored and other courses helping us get to know Jesus are being advertised now nationally, locally. It's an opportunity to tell other people that there's more to life than this. Apparently there are just 20 tickets left for the Riverboat Shuffle, this event in Southampton on the 6th of October. If you find it difficult to tell your story, perhaps a simple way is to say, come with me to a friend and we'll hear what it means to find out more about the Christian faith and to be a follower of his. Yes, Saul's conversion was the most significant event in his life. He's always writing about it. Corinthians, Galatians, Philippians, Timothy. He describes the profound impact this event made on his life. Let me read you of a modern conversion story, that of the most reluctant atheist. That's how he described himself. I became aware that I was holding something at bay or shutting something out, or if you like, that I was wearing some stiff clothing like corsets or even a suit of armor, as if I were a lobster. I felt myself being there and then given a free choice. I could open the door or keep it shut. I could unbuckle the armor or keep it on. Neither choice was presented as a duty. No threat or promise was attached to either, though I knew that to open the door meant the incalculable. The choice appeared momentous, but it was strangely unemotional. I was moved by no desires or fears. In a sense, I was not moved by anything. I chose to open, to unbuckle, to loosen the rein. I say choose, yet it did not really seem possible to do the opposite. On the other hand, I was aware of no motives. You could argue that I was not a free agent, but I am more inclined to think this came nearer to being a perfectly free act than most I have ever done. That's how C.S. Lewis described his conversion in Surprise by Joy. Not a Damascus Road experience, but an experience that is open to each one of us. If you would like to become a follower of Jesus Christ, there is no better time than to make that decision of commitment than today, than at this moment. If you would like to become a follower of His, and you agree with the words that have been said, make that prayer in your heart now, and perhaps come and talk to one of us in leadership afterwards. If we're already His followers, I'd like to close with a prayer. Last year, we will remember, we were looking at this series, Lost for Words, aimed at helping us share our faith more effectively. Can you review in your mind the sermon series about how we talked about our story, our testimony of what God has done to each one of us? Let me close with a prayer that is included in the Lost for Words course. Loving God, make my life a sign of your engaging love. May my heart be penitent, my actions generous, my words sensitive. Fill me with longing to share with others the good news I have received. Help me to see people as you see them, and anoint my life with your Spirit that Jesus be formed in me, his tongue to speak in me, his hands to work in me, his heart to beat in me. And so through all I do and all I am, and with the people where you call me to witness, may Jesus be known and his kingdom established. Amen. We have our mission audit taking place very shortly, and our away day, our vision day, on the 25th of November. One of the characteristics of a healthy church is evangelism. I wonder whether the mission audit will discover that we are effective as evangelists, whether we are boldly proclaiming the good news of Jesus. We'll be able to find out when we have the findings of the mission audit reported back to us, when we go away together as the whole church on the 25th of November to Hounsdown School in Tottenham.